their nuclear arms program is not a pathway to security or certainly prosperity.
Analyzing North Korea ahead of another United Nations meeting. It's Tuesday, May 23rd. This is VOA Asia. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Hello and welcome. We're also online. Check us out on Facebook at VOA Asia. Also ahead, Vietnam wants a larger trade role. New graduates start seeking new jobs. Asian art in Italy, growing food on the water, and adapting to survive. Stay with us. It all begins right now on today's VOA Asia. North Korea says its successful test of a solid-fuel intermediate-range ballistic missile Sunday confirms its combat readiness and it will be deployed.
A South Korean Joint Chiefs of Staff spokesman said South Korea and the U.S. intelligence authorities believe Pyongyang secured meaningful data in enhancing the credibility of its missile technology. But further verification is needed to determine whether it has mastered the re-entry technology for missile warheads. Still, the South Korean Unification Ministry said while a strong response to the North's launch is expected, Seoul will not cut off civilian inter-Korean exchanges, saying it won't foster stability on the Korean Peninsula. In Riyadh, U.S. Secretary of State Rex Tillerson told Fox News on Sunday the United States is still in the early stages of applying economic and diplomatic pressure on North Korea.
Hopefully, they will get the message that the pathway of continuing their nuclear arms program is not a pathway to security or certainly prosperity. The ongoing testing is disappointing, it's disturbing, and we ask that they cease that because until they cease that testing, clearly they have not changed their view. But I think we're early into the game of putting pressure on them, and one could also interpret that perhaps they're just acting out now in response to some of this pressure that I believe they're beginning to feel.
Japan on Monday vowed to pursue its own sanctions against North Korea, while the UN Security Council is expected to take up the matter later today. RAND Corporation defense analyst Bruce Bennett tells VOA's Victor Beatty Sunday's launch came a week after the North fired off another intermediate-range Hwasong-12, both aimed at developing an intercontinental ballistic missile.
It appears that the missile tested last weekend was the first stage of the ICBM. The one tested this weekend may well be the second stage. It could be a mixed liquid-fuel-solid fuel combination. So I think they're trying to make progress towards accomplishing the ICBM, as Kim Jong-un said in his New Year's address. And that's worrisome because they do seem to be making progress.
On Monday, North Korea said it had successfully tested an intermediate-range ballistic missile to confirm the reliability of a late-stage guidance of the nuclear warhead. What does that mean?
They're looking to try and develop not only a missile that can deliver a warhead, but deliver it relatively accurately. From what I've heard from some former senior defectors, they apparently have been using some form of GPS, potentially U.S. and Russian and maybe Chinese, in their programs. But to make that work, they've got to put together a system that exploits both the location information and guidance. They're at least claiming that they're getting there. We don't know for sure that that's the case.
Well, Bruce, Secretary of State Rex Tillerson on the political fallout said economic and diplomatic pressure will continue on the North. Quote, the ongoing testing is disappointing, disturbing, and we ask that it cease. The Foreign Ministry Office in South Korea said the tests were, quote, reckless and irresponsible, throwing cold water over hopes and desires of the new government of Moon Jae-in and the International Community for Denuclearization and Peace on the Korean Peninsula. Is the peace effort over before it even begins as far as South Korea is concerned?
No, I think President Moon Jae-in wants to get back to it, but Kim Jong-un has got to let him. Moon Jae-in with the South Korean populace, the broader populace that he now serves as president, has to be responsive to bad actions by North Korea. And these continuing missile launches constrain him in his ability to reconcile with the North. The North's got to cut it out, or he's not going to be able to make the progress he would like to.
Bruce Bennett said the fear is that the North could someday test launch a missile with a nuclear warhead, and the U.S. may be preparing to deploy warships in the Sea of Japan to intercept it.
Nonproliferation expert Robert Litwack gave his insights and recommendations during a recent talk he gave in Seoul about his book Preventing North Korea's Nuclear Breakout. Litwack is director of international security studies with the Woodrow Wilson Center for Scholars and served as director for nonproliferation under former President Bill Clinton. He says the United States can no longer wait for the repressive North Korean state to collapse under the weight of international sanctions, but instead must make a realistic deal that would allow Pyongyang to maintain its current nuclear and ballistic missile arsenal in exchange for suspending further tests and development.
The narrative would be that the United States was not accepting North Korea as a nuclear weapon state, but rather this was an interim step, freezing capabilities toward the long-term objective of denuclearizing the North Korean denuclearizing the Korean Peninsula.
He adds the current status quo of international sanctions, diplomatic isolation, and military deterrence has failed to halt or even slow North Korea's nuclear advance. But analysts say limited surgical U.S. missile strikes would not be able to destroy North Korea's extensive nuclear and ballistic missile arsenals that are reportedly in numerous fortified underground sites across the country. Instead, such an attack would almost certainly trigger retaliatory strikes against South Korea and Japan that could plunge the region into a catastrophic nuclear war. Also, Litwack says many in the international community would likely denounce the United States as an aggressor nation in such a scenario.
It would not be an imminent threat. It would be preventive use of force against a growing threat, and that is highly controversial in international law.
Critics argue that strong military deterrence, effective missile defense systems, and the U.S. nuclear arsenal will restrain North Korea from launching what would be a suicidal ICBM attack, and that continued containment would eventually produce transformational change in North Korea, leading to the collapse of the Kim government. Our thanks to VOA's Brian Padden in Seoul and Yeomi Kim for contributing to this complicated story. These are among some of the top Asia stories trending on VOAnews.com. President Trump may have limited options dealing with North Korean nuke program. Pakistani media says Islamic State terror attacks foiled, 5 arrested. Vietnam takes Asia lead in figuring out Trump policy on South China Sea. China says no mining in its immediate plans for Antarctica. Chinese online retailer developing one-ton delivery drones. You'll find expanded coverage of these stories and more on Facebook at VOA Asia and on our voanews.com website. VOA Asia continues. Vietnam's prime minister will be hoping for answers for Southeast Asia about the future role of the United States in helping the region resist Chinese expansion in a widely disputed sea. Next week, the prime minister is expected to become the first Southeast Asian leader to visit the White House since Donald Trump took office in January. Trade and maritime claims in the disputed South China Sea are expected to be high on the agenda. Murray Hybert, senior fellow at the Center for Strategic and International Studies think tank in Washington, says it's not yet clear what direction the Trump administration will take.
Being the first Southeast Asian leader to visit Washington, the Vietnamese prime minister will want to explore U.S. plans and goals for engagement with the larger Southeast Asian region. Vietnam will also want to understand U.S. policy and strategy toward the South China Sea and China's activities there, particularly at a time when Washington is looking to Beijing to rein in North Korea's nuclear and missile programs.
China continues to worry Southeast Asian countries by sending Coast Guard vessels through their exclusive economic zones in the 3.5 million square kilometer sea and building artificial islets ready for radar systems and combat aircraft. China uses historical records to back its claim to 95% of the sea that's prized for fisheries and fossil fuels. Donald Trump is trying to work with China to stop weapons proliferation in North Korea, which looks to Beijing as its chief supporter. Some analysts, like Frederick Burke, partner with the international law firm Baker & McKenzie in Ho Chi Minh City, say Trump may have shelved U.S. involvement in the maritime dispute to get on better with China, which the U.S. government normally regards as a post-Cold War rival in global politics.
They don't really need to say it, but it's very important that the region is seeing that the U.S. is still engaged.
Vietnam wants stronger U.S. backing. To reduce Washington's influence, China is talking one-on-one with Southeast Asian countries, including Vietnam, about managing their disputes. Last week, China and a 10-member group of Southeast Asian nations agreed to the draft framework of a code of conduct aimed at preventing mishaps in the sea. Brian Eiler is Southeast Asia Program Director with the Washington-based think tank, the Stimson Center.
All the Southeast Asian states tend to play a hedging strategy with great powers. Not one state is too interested in getting too far into China or the United States or another great power's sphere of influence. There are too many lessons of history that show that that's the wrong road to go.
On other issues, the Vietnamese Prime Minister, who took office last year, is expected to remind President Trump about a U.S. commitment to cleaning up the toxic defoliant Agent Orange, which the United States sprayed during the Vietnam War period from 1961 to 1972. Ralph Jennings in Taipei has our appreciation for sharing this story. Happening now in Asia, in Thailand, officials say a bomb blast in the capital has wounded at least 24 people. Authorities say the explosion at a military hospital in Bangkok happened on the third anniversary of a military coup. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We're glad that you're with us today listening to VOA Asia. Thank you so much. If you happen to be a new graduate, congratulations. About 3 million Americans are joining you, and they're all entering the job pool this year following graduation ceremonies at various colleges and universities across the United States. With unemployment currently at a 10-year low, 2017 is shaping up to be a good year for new grads. But as Millar Sega reports, success for many will depend on a desire to keep learning and a willingness to go where the jobs are.
Time waits for no one. But if you had to pick a year to graduate, 2017 would be the year to do it. Nicole Smith is chief economist at Georgetown University's Center on Education and the Workforce.
We are at one of the lowest unemployment rates we've had since May of 2007. So what that means for the graduating class is, you know, the likelihood of getting a job is really, really good.
Awesome. Really? I feel absolutely amazing.
Ziba Manavi is graduating with a master's in biochemistry. But she knows that in today's economy, her education is just getting started.
Because science is never ending. So that's why you're not limited to 4 years or 5 years. You have a lifelong to learn.
Visa requirements make job prospects for international students less clear. Despite graduating with a PhD in chemistry, Zhongyu Mo says he will probably have to move back home to China to begin his career.
You would prefer that you got yourself a job here.
I do, if I have an opportunity, yeah.
Other graduates will need to face similar choices. On Skype, Bankrate.com's Mark Hamrick says opportunities in today's economy means going where the jobs are.
The strongest demand for workers is occurring on both coasts and not so much in the middle of the country. And that suggests that there are still people who are either not faring as well or have been left behind by the economic recovery.
But for those still hoping for high-paying manufacturing jobs...
Those jobs are requiring a lot more skills than the predecessors. I mean, they're gone, they're not coming back.
Smith says in the 1970s, manufacturing represented nearly 2 of every 5 jobs in the United States. Today, they account for fewer than 1 in 10. Millar Sega for VOA News, Washington.
And we wish everyone the best in their job search. You're listening to VOA Asia.
Do you lead a busy life? Not always able to catch your favorite VOA radio or TV program? If you are keen to stay in touch with world news and events, give VOA Podcasts a try.
VOANews.com.
Visit our website at VOANews.com to learn how you can become a subscriber to VOA Podcasts and keep your life up to date.
VOA News, your trusted source for news and information.
This news alert from VOA Asia, the Philippines' top diplomat, Alan Peter Cayetano, downplays President Rodrigo Duterte's pronouncement that Chinese President Xi Jinping told him China would go to war with Manila if it insisted on drilling for oil in the disputed South China Sea. Stay up to date with VOA 60 and VOA Asia Facebook. This is VOA Asia. VOA Asia continues. Several Asian artists' works are featured at this year's Venice Biennale art exhibit in Venice, Italy. And as VOA Asia's David Byrd tells us, artists from Japan, South Korea, and Australia are exploring themes of identity and culture in their national pavilions.
Step into the Japanese pavilion, and you might think you are looking at a pile of laundry. It is, but it's not. Artist Takehiro Iwasaki's Turned Upside Down, It's a Forest has visitors climb a ladder outside the pavilion and poke their heads through a hole in the floor of the main hall. Around the pile of laundry are miniature oil rigs, rocks, and Japanese pavilions built in mirror image, as if one is seeing the reflection of the building in water. From the low angle of the viewer, the pile of laundry becomes a rolling landscape of hills and mountains. Meruo Washida is the curator of the Japanese Pavilion.
His work has many different layers of meaning. For example, when seen from the distance, it looks like a laundry on the floor. But when we get closer, we can find the small intervention. For example, small steel towers, then the laundry starts to appear as the natural mountain.
Iwasaki took inspiration from buildings along the Japanese coast to draw attention to issues like pollution, nuclear energy, and natural conservation. At the South Korean Pavilion, artists Cody Che and Lee Wan combined for several pieces. One of the pieces, Venetian Rhapsody, features a huge neon sign made up of pieces resembling the Holiday Motel in Las Vegas and neon signs in Macau. A huge dragon, a peacock, and a tiger feature prominently, as does an old-style marquee promising pole dance, free video, free narcissistic people disorder, free peep show, free orgasm. Che says that the work illustrates his own cross-cultural conflict as a Korean-American.
The big frame of my artwork is a double cross-cultural conflict, that which was I was experienced in the United States as a Korean-American for the last 30 years. Mainly that my piece, that outdoor sculpture, that outdoor installation, which is like almost like a Las Vegas sign age. Yes, it is Las Vegas sign age. I adopt and copy from some sign age from Las Vegas and Macau and bring over here to reassemble in my way for the Venice Biennale.
Lee Wan's Proper Time, Though the Dreams Revolve with the Moon, features 668 clocks, all showing a different time. Each clock has a person's name, year of birth, occupation, and nationality. Juan said the clocks represent how long a worker has to work in order to earn enough money to buy breakfast in different cultures. It's his way to question the value of life in a capitalist system. Australia's pavilion features a photo exhibit by artist Tracy Moffat. She uses so-called photodramas, staged photographs, to illustrate different themes.
I make art about what is happening in the world or family history. I take some facts, but I embellish and make the story operatic.
This year's Venice Biennale runs until November 26th. In Washington, I'm David Byrd.
Developing at this hour in Asia, a Taiwan court ruling this week could make the island the first place in Asia to legalize same-sex marriage, in a decision that would give activists around the region new hope in their quest for equality. All the big stories come your way throughout the day on VOA Asia Facebook. This is VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, just as in many large Asian cities, New York buildings outnumber green spaces. Some people have small gardens to grow some of their own food, But now another garden is growing in New York in a very unusual location. On a barge floating on a river, a variety of crops are being nurtured there. VOA's Deborah Block tells us more about this unique self-sustaining garden project.
It's springtime in New York, and this bobbing garden on a former sand barge is being planted with an assortment of vegetables, herbs, and fruit, even apple trees whose fruit will ripen in the fall. The smell of chocolate permeates the air. It is from mulch made from leftover cocoa bean shells that came from a New York chocolate-making company. Besides the pleasant smell, there is another perk. People can come on board the barge and pick their food for free. The project, called A Floating Food Forest, was started by Mary Manningly, a local artist who wanted to make fresh food available to all New Yorkers and create a model for sustainable urban farming.
So we worked with a scientist to devise a system where we can pull water from the East River and clean it and use it to water the plants. So the whole system is pretty much here. It's like all of these plants are perennials, so they come back stronger every year.
She also wants to encourage New York's Parks and Recreation Department to allow people to grow food on the grounds of city-owned parks.
There are actually 30,000 acres of park space, and we imagine, you know, this could be a potential for food sources and for especially fresh, healthy, delicious food that parks could adopt. So we could do this edible food forest legally on the water in New York City, but not yet on public land. If this works well, it could be a model for New York City's public spaces.
Over the coming months, the floating farm will move to several locations on waterways around the city, giving people in different neighborhoods the opportunity to pick what they like for their own meals. Deborah Block, VOA News, Washington.
The challenges of adaptation and survival are the themes of a new exhibit at the Natural History Museum of Los Angeles. Mike O'Sullivan reports this exhibit, Extreme Mammals, shows the radical changes in animal species over millions of years and the extinctions of species that failed to adapt.
A giant rhino the size of three African elephants that grazed on treetops in Tibet. This long-legged creature succumbed to climate change more than 20 million years ago.
Many of the areas become open country. The grassland actually takes over. So what that means is these animals actually have to travel wider distances in search of food.
Extreme mammals include an ancient whale that walked on land but took to ocean life, and more recent pygmy mammoths on California's Channel Islands, a comparison seen in these jawbones of a Colombian mammoth and its smaller cousin. Extreme adaptations helped the animals survive for a time. The exhibit from the American Museum of Natural History in New York is supplemented by more recent Ice Age remains from the La Brea Tar Pits in Los Angeles.
We've got the American lion, which along with the cave lion in Europe was the biggest cat that ever lived. We've got something called a scimitar cat, which was another type of saber tooth. We've got an extinct subspecies of jaguar. And then we have the mountain lion, which is the only one of those five big cats that's still alive today.
Changing climate over the ages and the more recent incursion of humans have presented challenges. But one surviving species, the mountain lion, thrives in California. One member famously lives in a wilderness park above Los Angeles.
People thought he'd just spend a couple of days there and continue to move on or attempt to move on. And he's the first mountain lion to ever make that journey successfully. Other mountain lions have tried but have been killed on the freeways.
The mountain lion is a survivor, unlike the more extreme mammals that once thrived but could not adapt to changing conditions. Mike O'Sullivan, VOA News, Los Angeles.
You've been listening to VOA Asia, and if for some reason you can't get our program in the usual manner that you do, you can adapt yourself. There are many different ways to get our program and listen to it. iTunes and SoundCloud are great places to download it. You can listen to us on voanews.com and on Facebook at VOA Asia. We'd like to thank all of our listeners in Myanmar who have joined us today via Facebook on VOA Burmese. Thanks so much for listening. We also thank our director, Tracy Carter, engineer Dan Crafton, managing editor Diane Gao, and our VOA Asia team, including David Bird and Ali Ogden. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. We hope you have a great day ahead.